Share your fellowship as we continue on here in the doctrine of volition, investigating it in regards to its existence and impact, etc., with respect to God and His creation. We pick up here Roman numeral 3, page 2 of our notes, looking at volition in terms of what is known as the angelic conflict. We are in a conflict between good and evil, just like the song we just sang brought out. And that conflict originated in the angelic core and has extended regards to the human race through our history, from which resolution has been made and will be fulfilled in terms of all things in the reconciliation package, peace package, accord, all things in heaven and all things on earth. That's what Corinthians just said. So Roman numeral 3, volition pre-existed the fall of man before Adam and Eve in the garden and the decision they made their free will to disobey God. So God's sovereignty, that attribute that describes His will, His volition, determined in eternity past to reveal Himself and share His glory with other created beings. He did not want to create robots. He wanted those who would willingly accept Him and appreciate Him and have a relationship with Him on their own accord. Be He will to create beings able to freely choose to have fellowship with Him, not robots or other unthinking mechanical entities. Man creates AI. God created free will. So see, His first order of moral creatures, as we have dealt with already, was angelic beings. We have the doctrine of angels that goes into detail in terms of this existence of these very powerful, supernatural, spiritual, yet able to manifest themselves physically, entities of creation. Job 34 verses 4 through 7 Job, a positive believer, no stretch of imagination there, existed not long after the post-diluvian period, the recovery of the flood. And he underwent severe testing, and through his book, which most theological historians accredit his writing, a lot of them at least, to Moses through a prophetic revelation. But nevertheless, he was a real person that existed. And through him, a lot of doctrine is brought out. His book is high in doctrinal material concerning cosmology, the world as it exists, has been created, etc. And there is reference to angels in regards to Job. Job 34, 4 and 7 is one of the passages. Said it was. Let's see here. That's the wrong one. How many times have we been through this doctrine, and how many times have I corrected this and somehow it ends up being wrong again? Let's try Job 38. That one will work. God speaking to Job. This documents the pre-existence of angels even before our existing universe came into existence. Where were you, Job, when I, Yahweh, the Lord, laid the foundation of the earth to establish its permanent state of being within the universe, the foundation? Tell me if you have understanding. Who said its measurements, since you know? God being a little facetious here. Sanctified sarcasm. Or who stretched the line on it? The circumference of planet Earth in terms of its distance, etc. Or on verse 6, on what were its bases sunk? This physics of matter or existence, was this gravitational force embedded into the planet's motion and process of circuitry around the sun? All this obviously takes force. Or who laid his cornerstone? All language of accommodation. And then verse 7, for our intents and purposes, when the morning stars sang together, the morning hosts, that's the host of God, it's language pointing to the angelic beings, when all the sons of God, that's their the hosts of God, that's the angels, shouted for joy. The process of creation, God existed first, then the angels existed. Then you have the original heavens and earth that was created by God. That is recorded for us in Genesis 1 and 1 and 2. Then there is a gap between the original creation and the restoration phase of Genesis 3 and following, of the 7 days restoration period, 6 days, 7 days rested in that vein. God created the original heavens and earth for the pleasure and enjoyment of the angelic host. They obviously, their base of residence is in what we refer to as the third heaven of God's kingdom in that vein. But a physical creation, the very tangible aspect of what we are familiar with, was a new thing. It was a spectacular, phenomenal act of God providing, if you will, for the angels to get to enjoy, to watch him do so as he spoke it into existence, etc. And then to enjoy it for their own pleasure and purposes. And all that is what brought about, as we know, the exposure of Satan and where his heart had gone in the meantime in the third heaven, which will again address all this. But for our intents and purposes here, And then Genesis 1, you got to understand the Hebrew, there's no to be verb. The English translation loves to translate God creating the heaven and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, as if that was the state of being in which he created. Other verses states that he didn't create it formless and void. But there is no to be verb in the Hebrew. It's the verb is hayah in the Hebrew. It means it became formless and void. And this all came about due to the rebellious fallout that occurred in the angelic core their presence on the planet, etc., and judgment by God in terms of this rebellious war that had begun in the angelic conflict. And then enter in the restoration and the creation of humans to bring about a resolution in that vein. So many Christians, believers, don't understand that process. There's an original creation. We don't know how old terra firma really is. God shut out the lights in the judgment. It became an ice ball, basically. And to restore it, the Holy Spirit moved over the planet and thawed out the ice ball. And it then became water. And all there was on planet Earth was water. Everybody wants water. Oh, there's plenty of it. And then the complete restoration started as God first created light. Let there be light, and he separated light from darkness. And then the terra firma of the planet then arose out of the waters. And it basically was one large continent. Known as Paneia, and after the flood, it got divided into a separate categories in general of how it exists today in terms of the continents spread out over the water. But anyway, and all those things. So obviously, that's enough to stump the archaeologists, you know. Uniformitarians, the evolutionist proponents trying to figure these things out. If they just studied the Bible, they could come to recognition and understand in regards to certain things a lot clearer than what science otherwise projects today. And we're warned about evolution in the New Testament in the last days, that it would be dominant in terms of the field of science. But anyway, all right. There I go again. At one point, half a Bible class. But anyway, so the first order of moral age creatures were angelic beings. Those verses designed to document that angels pre-existed the original creation. And I have before me today witnesses. I corrected it on my notes. We'll see what happens. If anybody remembers, if we ever get back here again. All right, so D, now, in line of these things, Lucifer, who was in the class of angels known as a cherub rather than a seraph, or the four living creatures. Lucifer was a cherub, which is a guardian type, sentry type of angel. God exalted to the highest rank of angelic order, chose to use his volition to rebel against God's sovereignty. In the angelic core, God created the angels, and he created Lucifer as the most beautiful of them all. And he was afforded the highest station, if you will, representation in regards to God's kingdom. Ezekiel 28, and in order to understand prophecy in the Bible, you got to understand that some prophecy is what is known as near prophecy, a singular prophecy. And then there is far prophecy, that which will happen way down the line. There are some passages that incorporate prophecy in a dual sense. It is a dual prophecy. In other words, it's prophetic in regards to certain near historic events that will occur, utilizing personages and circumstances, but also prophesies in terms of a far prophecy that will occur in time, or it occurs elsewhere in time. And here in Ezekiel 28, you have an example of dual prophecy, where Ezekiel is prophesying over what is known as the King of Tyre here. And words in the prophecy make it very clear that he's not dealing here simply with the historical king, and much of it does not even deal with the historical king. As verse 12 makes it clear, "Son of man, take up lamentation over the King of Tyre, and say to him, thus says the Lord God." And in verse 13 there, you had the seal of perfection, full of wisdom, perfect in beauty. This describes his appearance and his moral character in his terms of his existence. And then in verse 16, "You were in Eden." King of Tyre wasn't in Eden, in a garden. The dual prophecy now comes obvious in regards to this. And it is the prophet, it is prophetic in regards to the original Lucifer before the fall, and then in correlation to the fall. You were in Eden, the garden of God. And then you have there the descriptions of his makings in appearance, which is really beyond almost our imagination, this spectacular radiance, etc., that he projected. You know, we think about being in resurrection bodies and glory of light, etc., that represent one's righteousness and what they've done with the plan of God and time, and the difference of the manifestation in brightness and shining as stars differ and heavenly bodies differ in light. So you see this in regards to the angelic corps and the original and the creation of Satan. Satan is not this grotesque creature with horns and a pointy tail running around or living in hell right now. No, he is magnificently put together. And he's a genius in top of it all. And we know, furthermore, he's not incarcerated in hell right now. He is free, roaming about on the earth, weakening the nations. Why is he doing that? So anyway, so there is the expression now for our how he's put together, verse 13. But for our intents and purposes here, verses 14 through 17, it said, "You were the anointed cherub who literally guards." He's like a sentry in the throne room of God. "And I placed you there." He's there by grace. Not anything of what he has done for himself or what he has created. But he is there because God appointed him. "And you were on the holy mountain of God." See, denoting the higher, the highest of echelons positions and stations in regards to the kingdom. "You walked in the midst of the stones of fire." A feat that I've not worked all that out at this point in time, but it recognizes his abilities and execution of actions in light of God's throne room for whatever that represents. And in verse 15, "You were blameless in your ways." God creates all this creation perfect, sinless. You know, this whole BS out there in the world that people love to throw out there. "Well, God, you created me this way." You know, the adulterer, the fornicator, the drunkard, or whatever. "God created man this way, so it's your fault." That's about as satanic as you can get. No, he didn't create us this way. We chose to be this way through our corporate parents. But anyway, "You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created." until unrighteousness was found in you. Verse 16, by the abundance of your trade, you were internally filled with violence and you sinned. And therefore, I have cast you as profane from the mountain of God. That's his first fall. Satan has more than one fall. And I have destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty, known as pride. You corrupted your wisdom by reason of your splendor. He is in perfect environment. Nothing to tempt him. Everyone is holy. God is holy. He sees God. The perfect environment. Yet within his own heart, within his own soul, through his own choice, he started looking and affirmating over himself in terms of his splendor and his position, etc., in terms of God's economy. And pride was his original sin. Pride, see. Our society tries to crank everybody up to be proud about everything, see. Be proud about your service and be proud in regards to your professions and be proud in regards to your sports unless you're brown. But anyway, I had to throw that in there, you know. Told somebody on break, if you build your happiness on the Browns, we call that deserved suffering. But hey, they did better than what we thought they probably would do anyway. But Satan, see. And all this was within himself. It was in his heart. Only God knew it existed. Of course, God knew that from eternity past. And he kept it within himself. Enter in the original creation of our heaven and earth. All of a sudden, whereas the angelic core in whole obviously gave him approbation in terms of his glory and his magnificence of being. He's full of wisdom, another aspect of his person. And he is held in regards to, he's supposed to be an example of God's grace and love that he has for his creation. And they gave him that approbation, appropriately so. But in his heart, he garnished the sin of pride. And he became self-centered. And entering in the original creation of the heaven and earth, and all of a sudden, the whole venue of focus among the angelic conflict changed. Oh, wow, look at this. All of a sudden, their eyes were not on this beautiful, magnificent creature anymore. They're on this unbelievable creation that God just provided for their enjoyment. And that is what it took for Satan then to go, if you will, public in regards to his reaction to that under anger and violence. That really set him off. At least that's the way I see all this. We've been through this. But anyway. And then he rebels. He convinces a third of the angelic corps to rebel with him. Whatever argument he had. Again, two-thirds of the angelic corps did not go this way. They made their decision for all eternity at this point in time of their lives. Whether they would remain in the company of God, fellowship of God in his kingdom, or whether they're going to go and let Satan provide whatever promises he's made to them in his propaganda campaign to them and see if they could usurp God, see, and overthrow God eventually in terms of his sovereignty. But that's how it basically works out. And they made their decisions whether they're going on positive volition, stay on positive volition, as they were to begin with, or go on negative volition. And that's the first time negative volition enters into God's creation. But all that's there. That's part of this doctrine. All right. D. Lucifer, the chair of God, exalted to the highest rank of angelic order, chose to use his volition to rebel against God's sovereignty. Then you have the five I wills here of Isaiah 14, 12 through 14. We have the doctrine of Satan and satanic counterfeits. If you don't have the divine viewpoint in your thinking, you have what's called doctrine of demons. You have human viewpoint that replaces that vacuum in regards to your intellect. And today is the day we observe the Lord's table, so our time is there for that. So this is as far as we've got. Second session. So we'll just stop here. We'll let everyone get in their proper places and observe this ritual.